Local News, Culture, and NPR.
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, relief for those high energy bills? The New York State Senate advanced legislation to help protect ratepayers, support working families, and address New York's affordability crisis. The legislative package includes measures to establish affordable payment plan options for eligible utility customers. We'll hear from the chair of the State Senate Energy and Telecommunications Committee about whether or not that legislation will be in the final New York State budget. In this uncertain economic moment, we've got local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington. Spring cleaning, the Upper Delaware litter sweep is coming up and they're looking for volunteers. And Chamber Chats, our continuing series with the Chamber of the Northern Poconos. It's coming up, but first the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. The Trump administration has deported some 250 people it claims are gang members from Venezuela. But the people were not returned to Venezuela. They were flown to El Salvador. Salvadoran officials have imprisoned them. No evidence has been presented to support the accusations of crime against the deportees. A federal judge in the U.S. verbally told the federal government to turn the deporting flights back, but that didn't happen. President Trump invoked a rarely used wartime power to justify his actions. But the U.S. is not at war with Venezuela. Sky Perryman is the CEO of the legal organization Democracy Forward. She says her group has filed suit along with the ACLU to block Trump's use of the wartime power.
This is an expansion of presidential power that could essentially say, I mean, these people have now been, you know, removed, or the president is seeking to remove them without any type of due process. And that's against our Constitution, but it's also a threat to everyone.
She spoke to NPR's Morning Edition. President Trump ordered airstrikes on the Houthi-led regions in Yemen over the weekend. He is vowing to use overwhelming lethal force as long as the Houthis keep attacking shipping vessels. NPR's Luke Garrett reports now a Trump cabinet member is saying that targets in Iran could be next.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio says these strikes are not retaliatory or reactionary, as they were during the Biden administration. Rubio tells CBS News,
"This is an effort to take away their ability to control global shipping in that part of the world. That's just not going to happen anymore."
And Trump's national security advisor, Mike Waltz, criticized Iran's support for the Houthis. He also took one step further, telling ABC News that Iranian positions in Yemen could be airstrike targets.
"Other things that they have put in to help the Houthis attack the global economy, those targets will be on the table, too."
Around 50 people have been killed during these airstrikes, and the Houthi rebels vowed to, quote, meet escalation with escalation, according to the Associated Press. Luke Garrett, NPR News, Washington.
Stocks opened higher this morning as the Commerce Department reported a modest rebound in retail sales last month. NPR Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 100 points in early trading.
Retail spending rose by 0.2% in February after a sharp drop the month before. The spending picture was mixed, however. Shoppers spent more money on groceries but less on restaurant meals. Spending at department stores was down last month, but spending at online stores was way up. Tomorrow, the Commerce Department will offer a snapshot of the home building business. President Trump's tariffs on lumber and other building materials are expected to raise the cost of building a single-family home by $7,500 or more. Mortgage rates are another big factor in housing affordability. Rates have come down a little bit in recent weeks. Freddie Mac says the average 30-year home loan now costs just over 6.6%.
NPR's Scott Horsley. This is NPR. Deadly storms across the central and southeastern U.S. killed at least 39 people over the weekend. Sudden dust storms in Texas and Kansas turned deadly. A 71-car pileup in Kansas killed at least 8 people when visibility plunged to near zero. Tornadoes killed more people in Missouri and Mississippi. March Madness is here. The women's college basketball tournament tips off this week. South Carolina and its head coach, Dawn Staley, are looking to defend last year's title. But NPR's Becky Sullivan reports they have tough competition this year.
The Gamecocks went undefeated last season from start to finish, winning the championship. This year, they earned a one seed, but look a bit more vulnerable. The top overall seed went to UCLA, a school whose men's team is full of history, but the women have never reached the Final Four. With stars Lauren Betts and Kiki Rice, anything less than that will be a disappointment this time. Southern Cal and Texas are the other top seeds. The presumptive number one pick in the upcoming WNBA draft is Paige Beckers. Her UConn Huskies haven't won a championship since 2016. They're a two seed now. The women's tournament tips off Wednesday with a pair of play-in games, and the round of 64 begins Friday. Becky Sullivan, NPR News.
Closing arguments are set for today in a civil lawsuit in North Dakota. The suit is against climate action group Greenpeace. The parent company of the Dakota Access Pipeline is suing Greenpeace and others. The company claims their protests delayed the start of the pipeline and increased company costs. Greenpeace claims the lawsuit was filed to try to bankrupt the group and silence free speech. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Jarl and Pamela Moan, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts. And the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing transformative youth and criminal justice reforms.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. As we've been reporting, Radio Catskill has been telling you about customers with high energy bills and how they've been impacted. Now, State Senator Kevin Parker, who serves as chair of the State Senate Energy and Telecommunications Committee, has a legislative package aimed at addressing high utility rates for New Yorkers. The senator is pushing for it to be included in the final enacted budget due by April 1st. Chantal Destra with the New York Public News Network sat down with the senator to unpack the package and discuss the ways in which solar energy and federal funding can also combat high rates.
Thank you so much for taking the time to connect with us today, Senator.
I'm really happy to have this opportunity.
And we're excited to be here. And first, I wanted to get into your newly introduced legislative package meant to modernize utility processes in the state and help New Yorkers with those high energy bills. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Well, first of all, you know, I'm the chairman of the Energy and Telecommunications Committee here in the State Senate. And one of the things we know happening both in my district in Brooklyn, across the state of New York, and across the country is an affordability gap. People are just having a really, really hard time making their ends meet. We all know about the price of eggs. But people are also in real time experiencing that same kind of, you know, sticker shock when they get their utility bills every month. And so we created a package that we passed in the New York State Senate a couple of weeks ago that really goes to utility affordability. And so there are a bunch of programs that actually exist already for seniors and for people who are low income. And one of the bills I put in is a bill that would automatically connect people to those programs instead of you having as an individual person to do the research and call the utility and, you know, find out what program and apply and so on and so forth. And so we want to make it as easy as possible for New Yorkers to hold on to their hard-earned money.
And from your purview, is there anything that the state could be doing more of in regards to the Department of Public Service to help New Yorkers, you know, combat these high utility rates?
Absolutely. And in fact, one of the other bills I have is a fixed costs bill that looks at the fixed costs that come out of the PSC and try to reduce those costs such that, you know, again, we can lower utility rates. I think that there needs to be, you know, just a reexamining of the criteria that the PSC is using to decide rate cases. You know, but it is a complicated equation given the fact that utilities also have to maintain their infrastructure. So on one hand, they have to maintain their infrastructure. They do that through rate cases. On the other hand, we have utility customers who can't afford their bills. And so creating a balance through all those things is really important. And then what puts more stress on this process as a state legislator is the fact that we have an unreliable federal government, where we're not getting any help. In fact, just the opposite. And so, you know, everyone is trying to figure out what is the next best opportunity to both lower rates, but also provide the kind of service that people need and deserve from their utilities, both on the telecom side, energy side, and water.
So how would you like to see the federal government provide help to New Yorkers on this issue? Mm-hmm.
Well, it depends on what we're talking about. Let me say first on the telecom side, there was some money under the Biden administration in the IRA legislation for the build out of high speed broadband. Right, building out of high speed broadband is really, really critical, both in urban areas and in a lot of rural and suburban areas where they have what they refer to as the last mile issue, mm-hmm. where they, you know, they build out to a certain area, but getting it from the road to your house becomes a problem. So certainly that's a place that the federal government certainly could provide resources. On the energy side, particularly as we kind of transition to a clean energy economy, you know, it's kind of three areas of concern. One is actually getting clean energy assets into the ground to produce electrons. Those interconnections from the generation projects into the grid, right, need to be smoother. And this is the area that we really could use some help from the federal government on, is transmission lines, what we refer to as the grid, right? And those transmission lines need to be really, really upgraded. Certainly any dollars we could get from the federal government in order to do that would be, you know, resources we don't have to look to ratepayers for. And so those are areas that I would, you know, tell the federal government, you want to be helpful to the people across the country. This is an area that every single state needs some help with.
And at the time that we're filming this interview, the governor just recently sent a letter to the chair and CEO of Con Edison, mm-hmm. asking them to take a step back from their proposed rate hike. So mm-hmm. I wanted to get your reaction to that move from the governor.
Yeah, again, I understand that the governor is taking the issue about utility affordability very seriously, as, again, we have. But this, you know, even though we passed a set of bills on February 5th here in the state Senate, this is a package that we brought forward for the third year in a row. So this is, you know, we're not new to this, we're true to this. And we understand that utility affordability is a main, prong in the kind of the spokes of the wheel that is turning this state. I'm very proud to have been one of the people who worked with Governor Cuomo on getting a telecom affordability package. Right now it's about $30. When I initially put it in, I put it at $10. We wound up passing the law at $15, and then the courts made us raise it to $30. But we're one of the few states in the entire country, maybe the only one, that actually has a income-based rate for high-speed broadband. One of the things that people really don't understand is that high-speed broadband is as important as any other utility. In the same way, we would not never put anyone in an apartment or a house without heat, hot water, and electricity. We, in this, 2025, can't put somebody in the house or apartment without high-speed broadband. And so we need to make sure that it's as affordable as possible.
And when it comes to solar energy, is there any opportunity for the use of solar energy to help address affordability of utility rates and help protect New Yorkers?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that we have here in the state of New York that I'm very proud of is something called the CLCPA. Right, the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, right? And it really is a set of the most audacious and boldest climate goals in the entire country. And we really hope to get to be net zero by 2050 is the ultimate goal, right? We have some intermediate goals as well. And so solar development is a big part of that. Probably the base of our clean energy load is actually probably hydroelectric. We kind of take it for granted because we've had it for such a long time, right? And kind of the star of that system is Niagara Falls, right? But we have a huge commitment to building out solar here in the state of New York. We have a program in NYSERDA. NYSERDA is the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. And within NYSERDA, we have a program called NY Sun. And that's a program that provides incentives for solar development and utility scale solar development, right? So there's going to be a lot of retail, but we're not going to get there one house at a time. We're really looking for more, again, utility scale projects to produce clean energy electrons. And then a lot of times that's paired with wind and battery storage. I refer to it as the holy trinity of sustainable energy, right? Sun in the day, wind at night, and battery storage for times that you don't have either. And so we need to build out a lot more. We have the resources here in the state of New York. We've been working towards those goals. The big legislative item for us this year is kind of creating a statewide solar siting bill that would allow one standard across the state for building solar, so it's that solar developers don't have to negotiate terms in every single municipality across the state, which slows down the process and makes it more expensive.
And lastly, as chair of the State Senate Committee on Energy and Telecommunications, I wanted to get your perspective on how you're hoping the state will approach protecting New Yorkers from these high utility rates in the years to come in a way that is sustainable for the state.
Well, again, within the context of the CLCPA, if we, you know, we reach our goals, the more clean energy assets we get into the ground and the better our grid is and the more efficient our grid is, that will lower rates, right? So some of it is just really simple supply and demand. Mm-hmm. Right now, the demand for load, right? So the more, like, people just need more electricity, right? And so the more electricity people need, the more people are plugging stuff in, the more demand there is. And our generation has been stagnant. We really need to up ramp our generation. So we're doing that with kind of an all of the above approach as we go forward. And the more of that clean energy assets that we get into the ground, and that means that we have more supply of electricity, that's going to lower costs. Part of it also will be, you know, a lot of weatherization work that needs to be done as well. New York is an old state. We have old buildings. We need to, you know, retrofit those buildings. People need to plug into organizations like DACR, the Department of Housing and Community Renewal. They have a number of weatherization programs, as well as NYSERDA has weatherization programs that allow you to get energy audits to see kind of where you're losing energy at, how to get, you know, low energy appliances, light bulbs, those kind of things. And so part of this is a responsibility as us, or as individual homeowners and business owners, to look at our homes, our businesses, other buildings that we're occupying, and make them as energy efficient as possible, and simultaneously learn what they call demand response. So if you have a dishwasher in your house or a washer and dryer in your house, the best times to use those, you know, those appliances are really off-peak hours, right? So, like, don't turn your dishwasher on. I don't have a dishwasher. I am the dishwasher in my house. But, you know, rich people like yourself, if you have a dishwasher, turn it on at night before you go to bed, not in the middle of the day. That uses, you know, less expensive electricity, and that will keep your bill lower, right? So those demand response protocols are things that New Yorkers need to learn, in addition to the things that we need to do our homes in terms of retrofitting our homes and our buildings.
Well, sounds like you have a lot of important work ahead, but unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today, Senator.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And we were speaking with State Senator Kevin Parker.
It's Chantel Jester from the New York Public News Network. We'll take a break, and when we come back, James B. Huntington with Local Economic Perspective. This is Radio Chatskill.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. We've all heard this bit of wisdom. But there are times in life when inaction may be the wrong move.
There is a time and a place for a particular strategy to be successful. And when the conditions change, you can't just rinse repeat.
Staying the course versus pivoting. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Join me, Sabrina, for Trailer Talk, Monday nights at 7:30 p.m. Coming up, a moratorium was just proposed at the Bethel Town Board meeting by a group of citizens concerned about development in their neighborhood.
Moratoriums are used when towns are under pressure with unexpected projects and development pressures.
The development is happening too fast and furious.
Sabrina's Trailer Talk, Stories from America's Kitchen Table, Mondays at 7:30 p.m.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and it's Monday, so check in for some local economic perspective from local author, local economist, James B. Huntington. Happy Monday, James B.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
All right, well, let's dive in. Mentioned, I think earlier that we kind of feel, like this is an uncertain economic moment. Let's talk about some of the indicators that we have to help guide us a little bit with inflation. What happened with last week's announcement on inflation?
Yes, the consumer price index came in last week for February. It increased 0.2% compared with the previous month, working out to 2.8% on an annual basis. Both of those are down a little bit. They're a little smaller than they were the previous month. Not a big deal, but better. We have core prices, which include gasoline and food, which the other ones, or rather, these are the ones that do not include gasoline and food. They were up also 0.2%, but 3.1% annual. So those were also a little lower than expected. So we're doing well on inflation. I don't know how we'll end up looking next time when all these tariffs and all this Washington chaos comes to bear on the mid-March survey.
Yeah, on again, off again. What about last week's job openings and labor turnover summary? Now, this is something from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. What does that say for us?
Yes, this is the JOLTS report. It comes out once a month. So I'm telling you what's on there and how it did. The number of job openings was 7.7 million, much the same as the previous month. Then we have total separations at 5.3 million with quits. 3.3 million walked away for their jobs, and 1.6 million were fired or involuntarily kicked out of their jobs. The third number they have is hires, and those stayed the same at 5.4 million. So all really stable in these things. I don't trade as highly on these as I do on the employment situation summary numbers, but they tell you something. They give you some ideas, and sometimes should be figured in.
Well, and it looks like unemployment has sort of been steady around that 4% mark. Is that right?
Yes, generally not far from that.
And so it seems like things are sort of holding on the labor side of things there. But you've got some news about an event that's starting this week that you say could cost our economy up to $20 billion. What's that?
Well, the event is March Madness. It's the college the college basketball tournament. And we have a report from the Action Network, which is a top sports betting and media brand. They surveyed 3,000 college basketball fans who work full-time, and it turned out they concluded that because of game times, games during working hours, and other activities and people, a stunning 40% of these fans admitted to calling in sick to watch a game that was going to be during business hours. These fans were spending an average of 2.4 hours per day on miscellaneous activities related to the tournaments, like checking scores, checking brackets, live streaming games on devices, and almost a quarter of these fans were spending 4 hours a day on the tournament one way or another. Now, I always wonder how they figure these things. It's not fair, not at all fair, to take the number of hours they say they spend and divide that by their total working hours, because most cubicle workers have some extra time and are not going a solid 40 hours or more a week of actual work. So I'm not really sure what this means, but it gives you an idea. I've heard similar things over the years, like it was in the 60s and 70s and such, that the Tour de France cut down France's GDP by an estimated 1% during the month of August, the biggest month there.
Well, I guess it makes a little bit of sense in lost productivity when some of these games, especially in the first round, are in the afternoons on Thursdays and Fridays. So that's going to create a bit of a distraction for some folks who are following the tournament.
Yes, so there will be some. I mean, it will be something. We also don't know often these brackets and things if there's one of these betting things going on in your office.
Yeah.
And that is legal as long as nobody is making money. The person who runs the game is not allowed even to take a free square for themselves. If they do that, that makes them a professional gambler. But if it is totally even and nobody gets any advantage, it's within the law, and a number of observers have said they're very good for team building and getting you closer to your coworkers. So some of this is not nearly as bad as it seems,
yeah.
Or as this survey may have come through. It's just something to be aware of, that if you get out of hand with these things, then somebody's paying a price.
The men's basketball tournament starts tomorrow, concludes in San Antonio for the national championship game on April 7th. The women's tournament commences on March 19th and comes to its conclusion for the final on April 6th. Do you have your bracket ready, James?
Oh, I haven't done that for some time, but actually my team is Indiana, and they barely missed out on making the field.
Yeah. You got some other economic news about overseas, though, about Germany and their economy. You've got some reporting about how there may be some troubles in the German economy, and what are those prospects?
Well, it's been good for decades, but the last several years, it's not been doing very well at all. The issue is that the population is aging, so there are fewer highly qualified workers. They've been underinvesting in infrastructure, and those bills are starting to come true. They're about the most export-oriented economy, and have been, of major countries for a long time. So they're having trouble producing enough things to bring in money to cover everything. The age may be coming to a close when they have lots of guest workers, as they have over there for a long time, to cover all these exports. Mm. But the catch is that nobody really knows quite what to do about it. We have a new chancellor coming in, Friedrich Merz, who is a conservative but not far-right party member. So he's talking about border controls, a crackdown on illegal immigration. It's kind of a funny thing to strike me to go after when they're short on workers. Maybe they should be canvassing these illegal immigrants and harnessing them somehow instead of barring them from jobs they need.
Let's talk about wage growth here in America and how that's impacting lower income workers. What's going on with low wage income workers here in our economy?
Well, a couple of situations, according to a Brookings Institution study, are especially bad for low paid workers. They have volatile hours. They have unpredictable work schedules. That kind of thing has not improved a lot, even though with Amazon and Starbucks, the work schedules have caused a lot of union activities and a lot of anger among workers. That's still especially a problem. And at their level of income, it has a higher chance of affecting whether they will have enough money to decently live on by their standards if they don't know what hours they'll be working. I mean, I've been in work places like that, and it's not much fun, and I don't think there should be as much of it one way or another. I know they like to cut things close, and especially in the restaurant business, with not having extra workers standing around and such, but they may need to do that in order to keep the kind of employees they want to have, because it's a lot of those jobs are low paying, and they're getting the worst of this situation.
And it looks like there might be another threat for workers. Robots? Is this real? Uber is launching a robot food delivery service?
That's absolutely true.
Wow.
They are doing that. It's quite limited now. It's only in Jersey City, but that is halfway nearby to us. So customers can have a choice of having them delivered by humans or by Avride autonomous robots. So it's through Uber Eats. It's a service provided by Uber, and they are rolling this out for real and allowing people to have the chance. You have to be in downtown Jersey City, and you have to place the order between 11 a.m. and 9 p.m., but they're going to see how it goes. This will be a real no-nonsense test. And we will see if the robots arrive decently on time and they can go only a few miles per hour. But if distances are short, it may be more convenient for everyone.
Wow.
And if it works out, it's likely that they will do more of this in more places.
Wow, it's happening. The robots are taking over Jersey City. All right, let's talk about the numbers. What were the numbers this morning at the stock market, oil, precious metal, the other prices?
Okay, as of early this morning, and this is a week time frame, gold $29.87, up $91 an ounce. That's a safe haven. People are really going for it. And in fact, it crossed 3,000 briefly, and it's very close right now. Silver, $33.68 an ounce, up $1.29 in the past week. People are discovering it more. The ratio between silver and gold is down a little, 89-1, but silver is a real option if you want more of it, if you want an alternative or a reinforcing combination with gold. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 41,488, down just over 1,300 in the past week. That's over 2,300 in 2 weeks. It is really suffering from these off and on tariffs, and not only the chance of prices going up and more inflation, but the chance of getting people to not know how to organize businesses, not knowing what plans to put together. And then we have NASDAQ, 17,754, down 442, a similar ratio thing. That's down over 1,000 in the past 2 weeks. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, 67.77. That's up 84 cents. It's still down. It's still staying below the 70 mark where it was sitting around for a long time. Bitcoin, 83,564. That's up 1,900 and some. That's staying low, though, by recent standards. It was a month ago or so, it was flirting, going up above and below 100,000. It's less than that. British pound, 1.2949, up 58 hundredths of a cent. The dollar dropped some more. That had the same effect on the euro, 1.0887, up 67 hundredths of a cent. Japanese 100 yen coin, though, faded a penny to 67 cents. Overall, these are scary times. How we're going to do is going to depend on how various countries, companies, courts, and people react to the things Trump wants to do.
Yep.
So it looks like we're stuck with that indefinitely.
It is certainly uncertain. James B., thanks for being here to give us a little bit of calm and perspective with your look at the economy. Local author and economist James B. Huntington. We'll see you next Monday.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, it's time for some spring cleaning along the Upper Delaware. We'll learn more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Chatskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union, and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, independent grassroots global news. Our reporting includes breaking daily news headlines and in-depth interviews with people on the front lines of the world's most pressing issues. People speaking for themselves, providing unique and sometimes provocative perspectives on global events. Democracy Now!, weekdays at noon, right here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Upper Delaware Council's fifth annual litter sweep is coming up during Earth Month, and it's going to be led by volunteers spring cleaning the Upper Delaware River Valley. Here to tell us more is Lori Ramey, Executive Director of the Upper Delaware Council. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's time for spring. It's time to clean. Let's remind folks about the UDC's litter sweep and what you guys hope to accomplish with that.
Yes, we're now in our fifth annual year, which is hard to believe, but it's been great each year. We've grown with our number of volunteers and our participation. We always aim to be in all 15 towns and townships surrounding the river, but we're happy to accept as many as we can get organized locally.
And how did this event come about? You know, it's only in its fifth year. How did this idea to get people together in the community to come together to protect the environment, protect the river corridor?
Right. Well, we're always conscious of pollution and obviously the negative effects that has on our environment. We started to look at how microplastics are becoming such a terrible issue for the waterways. And clearly, if you can prevent the litter from migrating into the waterways in the first place, you're better off. Also, of course, our region is thriving through tourism, and it's a very unattractive, unappealing sort of vista to offer if after the snow clears, you have garbage left on the ground. So we really need to put our best foot forward. And we, as the Upper Delaware Council, are happy to take that coordinating role, since we already represent all of those municipalities. It certainly makes sense.
And this is volunteer driven. This is what's really great about this, is that you get members of the community coming out. Talk a little bit about the different levels and ways people can get involved.
Sure. It can be everything as simple as a group of family and friends deciding to take on their local road or their street or adopt a park or a river access, to some of our more elaborate cleanups are done by entire municipalities, where a town or township will get together and organize with groups such as scouting clubs or school organizations or civic groups, and have quadrants of the town or township that they've set up to really make sure that they get to the whole area, and they have a central hub where they'll dispense the free supplies. And that's an important part of this cleanup, is that we do, as the UDC, we provide all of the trash bags, the pickers, the gloves, all the safety equipment to help out. We do the permitting and also make some arrangements with the litter leaders to have disposal options for the garbage they collect.
Let's talk a little bit about this year's event being dedicated to Ruth M. Jones. Talk a little bit about the significance of Ruth and what she meant to the Upper Delaware community, for those who may not know her.
Yes. Well, Ruth was the matriarch of the Kittatinny Canoes and Campgrounds. She was a second generation owner of that business, which of course was a very important livery for a watercraft rental service here. And she, in her time with the business, had started a river cleanup, which was extremely successful back in 1990. It was called On and Under the Delaware River, because they would send people out in canoes to snorkel and scour the river bottom, as well as go along the shorelines and on the river itself. And they won national awards through that program. They had a loyal troop of volunteers that would come back year after year. They would provide them with camping, with meals, and the transportation and the canoes, obviously. So Ruth recently passed away at the age of 92, and she was such an inspiration to so many people with her own personal ethic of environmentalism and caring for the river that we wanted to take this year to really honor her and her memory. We asked the family, and they were certainly on board with the whole notion.
What are some of the lasting effects, you think, of Ruth's work on the river and the surrounding communities?
I think she brought a consciousness to how, if the river is any part of your daily life or your livelihood in terms of, you know, having jobs dependent on it, then we all have a role to play in its protection, and that pitching in any way, in any minor way, is always going to be a benefit.
I think that's really a great message to have people understand and hear, is that you see it on a map, you may cross over it, you may see it, you may go into it, participate and, you know, recreate on it. But you as an individual, just one person, can help with the life of this river and the environmental impact that you and your town or your friends or the volunteers you have can really make an impact.
That's why we hand out team T-shirts, too. It's a very unifying factor that everybody is wearing the same uniform, essentially, and you are part of this camaraderie of people who obviously care about where they live and are doing their part to help protect it.
Let's talk about the T-shirt, because I think the last time we talked about this, we were talking about the contest. You have a winner, and the theme is Don't Be Trashy.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the theme, the design, and the winning designer.
Yes, one of our board members, Christine Martin from the town of Highland, came up with that idea of Don't Be Trashy to have a central theme to do a contest around, which was the first time we had tried to come up with a design that way. And it was very successful in people of all ages and amateur and professional levels decided to submit a design inspired by that slogan. And ultimately, we chose a design by Bonnie Matthews, who is a professional illustrator and a relatively new resident of Narrowsburg who was looking to get involved in the community. So for her, I think it's made a lot of connections that have been very positive for people to see her work. It's a very imaginative, creative design of a deer holding a little bird and some trash surrounding them, and very cute. And I think that people will enjoy that.
The deer looks like it's participating in the pickup as well. Like the trash is sort of floating over the top, and the bird has landed on the deer in the illustration, and they both look very happy.
They do. It's very sweet. Yes, and I think that it's also helpful. We print the T-shirts on a safety blaze greenish yellow color so that people don't need to wear safety vests over it, because the shirt itself provides that visibility. I'm also pleased to say that we have our big Upper Delaware Council Land, Water, People logo emblazoned on the back. And on the side, we have our media sponsor, which is Radio Catskill. And thank you very much for that.
Conveniently enough, we are supporting it this year again, and we're proud to do that. We are proud to amplify this message of, environmental stewardship. But you also rely on some other donations and sponsorships. If other businesses want to get involved, how can they get involved?
Sure. We are set up as a 501c3 organization in general, but we also have a dedicated fund for this program. None of the operating funds that the UDC receives to survive goes into this program. It's wholly driven by sponsorships and donations. I am thrilled to announce that Sullivan County Legislature Chairperson Nadia Reich, who also is on our board representing the town of Lumberland, has secured $2,000 through her district for this program again. So that is a majority of what we will use to purchase the supplies in the T-shirts. We're also printing litter leader hats this year as a way to identify who's in charge when people show up for these events. So we are happy to accept any donations of money, good old cash, or goods or services as well. Kittatinny Canoes, particularly this year, in light of our Ruth Jones Memorial, which they also have dedicated the on and under the Delaware River cleanup to for the last 4 years, they will be supplying a lot of the garbage bags and some pickers and also cases of water, for example. So those sort of donations are also welcome.
Where can folks get more information about that, but also about how to sign up, how to volunteer, how to get your town or your group together to participate during the litter sweep coming up during April?
Sure. Well, on our website at www.upperdelawarecouncil.org, all the information is posted there, or you can always call us at 845-252-3022. Or email us at info@upperdelawarecouncil.org, and we can set you up with all the information that you need.
And I, just before we go, like, if you want to leave folks with something about the, you know, we talked about the importance of the litter sweep, the importance of environmentalism, but there's really this part of unity, I think, in the community by doing something like this, especially at this time where you can take some action that makes a difference.
I think it's just all purely positive. There's no drawback to this whatsoever. We've heard a lot of instances of people meeting their neighbors that hadn't been acquainted with them before through this. And it just sort of sets up networks among each other that not only is a way to give back to the community and to the environment, but also just makes you feel good inside that you've taken some of this unsightly litter off our roads.
That's Lori Ramey, the executive director of the Upper Delaware Council. The Upper Delaware Council's fifth annual litter sweep is honoring Ruth M. Jones, the Queen of the Delaware, as she was known.
Yes.
That is during Earth Month in April. And you can find out more information at the UDC's website, upperdelawarecouncil.org.
Right. And we also have a calendar there, which will list all the local cleanups. So you can see what date your community has selected.
Thank you, Lori. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And in some other environmental news, a reminder, the statewide burn ban went into effect Sunday in New York. From the New York Public News Network, WAMC's Samantha Simmons reports.
New York's Department of Environmental Conservation says wildfires can be costly to communities. Speaking at the Albany Pine Bush Friday, Acting Commissioner Amanda Lefton says if a fire becomes untamable, you should call for help immediately.
If there is a fire, keep your fire contained, right? We want to make sure that we're having small bonfires that are contained, not letting that get out of control. But if a fire does get out of control, they should call their emergency services immediately to help respond to that fire.
Region 4 Lieutenant Tyler Mitchell, a forest ranger, says thousands of acres are burned each year by wildfires. Mitchell says since the start of the year, the DEC has contained 19 wildfires that burned more than 500 acres. He says people should not burn debris. Not all fires are against the rules, however.
Backyard fires in an enclosed fire pit, any cooking fires, small cooking fires, those types of fires are allowed during the burn ban. You can't burn brush during the burn ban, which is, one of our primary sources of wildfire during the springtime.
Officials also encouraged people to clear all flammable materials within 3 feet of any fire and to never leave fires unattended. Anyone who burns during the ban is subject to a misdemeanor offense with a minimum fine of $500. For the New York Public News Network, I'm Samantha Simmons.
And we'll take a break. When we come back, our continuing series of chamber chats. That's next. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
I'm Mimi Bradley, Radio Catskills Development Manager, reminding you that a great way to keep public radio here in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania is by becoming a Sound Supporter. Sound Supporters give small amounts, $20, $30, $50 a month or more, that add up to a big help. Plus, Sound Supporters get special thank yous, like drawings for tickets to events in our community throughout the year. Become a Sound Supporter. Go to wjffradio.org.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we're at home with Screamin' Jay Hawkins. There's music to play in the dark by the Jungle Sextet, and you're invited to a bongo party with Les Baxter. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, our series Chamber Chats is a partnership with the Chamber of the Northern Poconos, where we get to meet some of the businesses and individuals behind those businesses in Northeast Pennsylvania. And today we are talking to Jill Kallenberg, President of Marketing Management Solutions. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning, Tim.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for coming over. Let's talk a little bit about marketing management solutions. You mentioned it in the break. Like, well, we do marketing. Well, that makes it's in the title. But you've done it for a lot of different companies, from Fortune 500 companies to smaller companies. Can you talk a little bit about your work and some of the rewarding aspects of it you have for your customers?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for asking, Tim. So we do, as you mentioned, marketing. When my business partner and I started this business, we had been working for Fortune 500 companies, and we really saw a need for smaller companies to be able to leverage some of those same technologies. And back then, it was really expensive. But now, things are much more affordable and reachable for young, more startup companies and for local businesses to really tap into.
Is that something you talk to local businesses about, that, you know, when you think about a marketing campaign, it's not like you have to be on billboards across the country, but you're a local business. You could target on social media, for instance, at a very low cost.
Yes, exactly. And that's one of the things, particularly you mentioned about the chamber in the Pike County area and the Sullivan County area. Some of the businesses still have traditional mindset and do the traditional businesses, which is the marketing, which is great. But also when we have the tourism coming into the area, there is a population that's a little bit more sophisticated and looking online and not necessarily finding the local businesses in the way they should.
Can you talk about some examples of local businesses that you've worked with that are, you know, successful for you and for them?
Yeah, sure. For example, one of the companies that we just started working with is a home inspector. They had been a contractor, so they have a lot of years of experience, independent business that they're starting out, and trying to really capture that market in the lake region where we are, of the people looking for second homes, people coming to the area, and they're finding national home inspectors. So got them into a program where Google specifically tries to help local businesses with their local service ads to be able to gain that visibility.
You're always asking someone, do you have a guy or do you know someone who, or how about her? Does she help with this? There's a word of mouth part of it, but then you can put this into action locally with some very targeted campaigns.
Yeah. And even when you're getting a recommendation nowadays, the first thing you're doing is going online and Googling that business. And so if they're not found, if they don't have a lot of recommendations beyond your friend, it really can impact your buying decision.
Well, that's how we think now, right? If they don't have a particular like online presence that you can kind of judge yourself, you know, your friend's word is good, but like you need to have a little backup there too. What do you think is one of the most like underutilized aspects of marketing for businesses these days? Is it social media? Is it that aspect of things?
Well, social media is one piece of it, but for some businesses, it's really their database, believe it or not, and it's the most effective return on investment. So there's a local business in New York that is selling nationally and even beyond there. They do industrial coatings that can help prevent pipes and things like that from needing to be replaced. So they're selling into an industrial market. And the real power in what we started for them was their database and being able to speak to people who are in those industries and the people at the industries who would be thinking about repairing the pipes.
Yeah, just like the simple keeping names, numbers, contact information in an accessible place where you can use it again to your benefit.
Exactly. And we can monitor how much they're engaging with the content that our client's putting out there. And we can send notifications to their salespeople saying, hey, this particular contact right now just went on this particular page on your website, perhaps they're interested in something and you should follow up with them.
What's rewarding for you in this business and for your work with your clients? What's the most rewarding thing for you?
Oh, thanks for asking that, Tim. I, you know, reflect on this every year. And I went back and I looked at how many companies we've helped over the, you know, decade and a half that we've been in business. And there were 300 companies that we've impacted, whether it was a small project or we're still working with them today. And I thought about how we're a small business, we're feeding our families, and we've helped these 300 other business owners feed their families and their employees and keep their employees feeding their families. And that's really rewarding for me.
What do you see are some of the opportunities for marketing for small businesses, local businesses coming up in the next, I don't know, 5 years or so?
Well, that's a good question. And taking a quick step back, at the Chamber, we've started a Women in Business section segment. And so I just spoke to the first Women in Business that we had and helped them learn how to improve their digital footprint. And there's a lot of opportunities if people reflect back on where they are and are they being able to be found in Google searches and do they have consistent information out there for the new AI that's coming? Will they still be getting their business known and their expertise?
Does AI scare you? Are you excited about it?
Well, I am excited about it, but I also am relatively cautious about it because if we just rely on AI, then there's no new original content coming out. So eventually it could tire itself. I think the AI really needs people to continue to feed it.
It's a tool that you can use as part of this mix. It doesn't take over everything. At least we hope not.
Exactly. It's like when I was a kid and my fourth grade teacher said, you need to learn how to add because you're not going to walk around with a calculator in your pocket. Yet we do. But we still need to know how to add.
What advice do you have for folks who are maybe thinking about, you know, doing this, taking a broader step into marketing their businesses? It can seem a little intimidating in some ways when you use words like digital footprint and things. If you may not be aware of how that works, what advice do you have for folks?
I think the biggest advice that I give to people who are getting started in this is to think of the things you can do, but to make small steps over time to improve where you are. So just like anything else, you know, put together a year plan and put together what you're going to accomplish each month and think about where your customers, your potential customers, are going to find you and be in the most so that that's where you're focusing.
Are you excited about the growth in the business community in the Delaware River Corridor, Pike, Sullivan, the area, Northern Poconos?
I am. I see a lot of possibility for them to really improve where they're at and to be able to be found by when the tourists are coming, you know, and they're searching for businesses that they can use locally rather than finding, you know, national chain companies all the time. They could be finding the individual businesses who have been here for a time.
And where can folks get more information about what you do and your company?
So our website is marketingms.net. And there's a lot of information on there, including ways that you can contact me.
And there's more information about the Chamber of the Northern Poconos at northernpoconos.org. We've been talking to Jill Kallenberg, President of Marketing Management Solutions, as part of our Chamber Chats series. Jill, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tim.
That'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. You can find our program and all of our local programs at our website, wjffradio.org. While you're there, sign up for our weekly newsletter. It comes out every Friday in your inbox. Stay up to date on the latest news and information from Radio Catskill. Just go to wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan 180. Building healthy communities through people, places, and policy one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
On Point is coming up next, but first a look at the forecast. Light rain ending this morning, then cloudy. A high of 45, and then temperatures dropping steadily throughout the afternoon to a low of 24 tonight. Some winds gusting up to 20 miles an hour this afternoon and this evening. Tomorrow's sunny again, though, and a high of 57. And looking ahead, it looks like Wednesday's high 65, sunny skies, some rain back in the forecast for Thursday. And by Friday, temperatures go back down to 39 with some snow showers possible in the morning.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.